Hey everybody, this is Beach Mind, aka The Terrible Australian, and welcome back to a long-awaited brand new episode of the In Conversation edition of Super Podcast. My regular podcast co-host, Super Marcy, who usually hosts these episodes of the show, unfortunately couldn't make it tonight due to work, so I'll be doing this episode for in her place. And for this episode, we're going to be talking to Adelaide artist and comic book writer, Anthony Christou. Hello, Anthony, how are you?
G'day, Bede, and how are you, mate?
Oh, not too bad, thanks, Anthony. How are you going?
Pretty good. I can't complain, so yeah.
So how does it feel being finally coming on to the Super Podcast? Because we have been trying to arrange this for quite a while, and we finally got you here.
Yeah, it's pretty good, mate. Thanks for having me on the show. So it's been, yeah, I suppose everyone's busy. I've been busy. You guys have been busy. So.
Oh, when aren't we not busy? That's the thing, though. But the question is, have you been on other podcasts prior to this one?
Yes, I actually have. I've been on quite a few. I've been with Audio Nights.
Yep.
They're an American-based podcast, mm-hmm. So they had me on for a show last year, and I think they want to do another one with me, and I think they like me, maybe. And then we have the Half Tone Effect, I think it was Kieran Nunn, he does indie comics, mm-hmm. He's from Country Victoria, I believe, or
yep.
Yeah, I think so, and so yeah, he had me on his show, and to be honest, there's been another really exciting one. I can't tell, well, I don't know. It's coming out November the 16th, this awesome YouTube interview. It's with some amazing person. I can't say who, because it's not out yet, but she's top in the industry. She's worked for companies like Lego and all that. She's got her own podcast, so she's interviewed me. She's over in Europe,
yep.
And she had me on the show, and that was an amazing experience too. And yeah, so she wants to come to Melbourne as well, so it'll be interesting. We'll show her around, or she wants to come to Australia, so yep. Yeah, we'll show her around. And yeah, there's been a few shows, you know, they're the standout ones, and now, of course, on your show,
you do realise now, by being on the Super Podcast, this is going to be high point of your whole career, because we are, like, I mean, for anyone who has ever guested on the show, it's pretty much the pinnacle of
really?
Their podcasting
what happens afterwards as a career?
It just goes completely downhill from there.
The career collapses? Oh, crap.
Well, mostly by
Can I pull out now?
No, unfortunately, you can't. Most of the time, it does go downhill is when I'm on it, because yeah. Everyone knows I'm the terrible Australian, and everything becomes terrible very quickly, and then it just goes downhill from there, and it's never the same for any of the guests.
Yeah, I don't know, man. We'll see. Let's time tell. Let time tell. You
exactly.
Know?
Exactly. Yeah. But Anthony, I want to ask you something.
Yep.
Since we are doing a little in conversation, mm-hmm. I want to get to know you a little bit more. So tell not just myself, but also for the listeners out there, a little about yourself, where you come from, and about growing up, and all the little bits before you became Anthony Christou, the artist.
Okay. Cool. So, as a kid, I was always kind of creative. Like, I did, I was raised by my grandmother for the first 5 years of my life. My parents lived in the house, we all lived together, but my mum was a busy working class lady. She worked in education, so she was always busy out and about. My dad was a plumber, but I'd stay home. My grandmother was a dressmaker, so she worked with some really good fashion designers in South Australia. And I suppose growing up, I see her kind of with design plans for dresses and clothes and costumes and all sorts of interesting and weird stuff. And I wouldn't draw costumes or dresses, although, you know, but I would actually be drawing cars and superheroes and Transformers and Star Wars characters
yep.
as a kid in her sewing room. So I'd be stuck in there. Not stuck in there. I suppose I enjoyed being in there because it was great memories with my grandparents. And that kind of fostered the creativity as a child. And I noticed, didn't notice, it was quite obvious I was a really good dancer and singer, and I did a bit of acting, and I ended up as a kid getting into that. And I did acting and singing and dancing for about 7 or 8 years, so I was about 13, 14 when I suppose puberty hit, and things went downhill from there. So what happened was, I suppose I kind of realized I didn't want to be a dancer for life or a singer. And acting was good. I like acting and I like storytelling and I love movies. But I went into art then. I was always drawing, of course, the whole time, but as a kid. But when I was 13, I went to art school. And Well, I was in a high school that really tailored itself towards art, which was weird, a private school, and I ended up on an art scholarship in high school. But before then, you know, going into the achievements and all that, before then, I suppose what inspired me and what influenced me were great TV shows and movies and other art movements. So for me, it was, you know, I used to watch Neverending Story, The Labyrinth. I love that those two movies. The kids, Star Wars, of course, you know. Yep. Just trying to think. You know, I was playing Lego. I was creating Lego with my dad. Like, we'd always... I remember some nights we'd be up... I mean, I was like 6 or 7 years old, up till midnight with my dad making Lego pirate ships and Lego train sets. Yep. And my mum would come down, scream at us and like, go to bed, Jack. Go to bed, Anthony. You know, like... So, yeah, I mean, that's where it all started. And as a kid, that was, I suppose, I think having parents that really fostered creativity, they understood the importance of it. They were always worried. They were always worried, you know, are you going to make a career out of it? Find a stable job. Being from a Greek Cypriot family, it's kind of like they kind of want you to have a stable job. Although it's the kind of cultural norm to go, oh, go become an accountant or go become a lawyer or go study something like, I don't know, architecture. And they always were saying, you know, maybe you should get a design degree, which is what I did do. But they obviously realized that you have to follow your heart later on in life. And, you know, it's important to do what you really, truly love, because that's what makes you happy. We only live here. We're only on this planet once. We might as well do what we love. But, yeah, there's so many things that influence me. I mean, I used to play as a kid HeroQuest religiously, force my sister, who was not into that stuff, to play HeroQuest, and she hated it. I remember.
I think we were all like that at some point, where we'd always get all of our siblings to play something with us against their will.
Yeah.
And they would used to hate it.
Yeah. So she still has nightmares of it. She, like, when I told her that I was playing that with her, with my nephew, she was like, not that bloody HeroQuest game, you know. But my nephew loves it, so, which is really crazy, because I used to be the dungeon master with my family, and like, I used to create all the enthusiasm and all the campaigns, mm-hmm. and tell the story of how the barbarian or the wizard would lead the dungeon, and my family just did not give a shit. You know, they played just because they love me and they wanted to have fun. But now I've got my nephew who I played the game, and I let him create a character and go in with the barbarian and do whatever he wanted to do. And he liked it. And then he's like, I want to do what you're doing. I'm like, what? And he wanted to be the dungeon master or the wizard, the evil wizard. And he's running the whole campaign for me. Every time we play it, he's like, so I'm actually get to play HeroQuest properly for the first time in my life, which is really funny. So all that sort of stuff has influenced me in creating what I've created. And I suppose art movements, as a teenager, as a kid, I looked at the surrealist art movement. That's been a major influence, Salvador Dali. There's a lot of other art movements, like the romanticists, the painters, the romanticist movement, which was huge, with its hyper-realistic from the 1900s and all that. And all that sort of movement of art. I mean, and of course, comics, you know, I grew up with comics. Like, from 13 years old, I worked at my dad's cafe. He had a restaurant cafe in a shopping center. And, you know, I worked as a kid. Even though I went and studied high school, you know, I'd work on the Saturday or in the school holidays. He'd force me to work. But the bonus of doing that was that there was the news agency was right next door. So I could actually go and grab comics, and my dad would give me pocket money, and I'd have like get X-Men comics from like 90. I've got X-Men comics from 93 to 96 when I was there for 3 years, doing part-time work, and I collected comics, Spider-Man, Simpsons comics, X-Men comics, Spawn, even indie comics like Spawn, which are kind of indie, you know, just anything I could get my hands on. Visually, I'd be copying the comics and looking at them and going, wow, this is cool, or, you know, just reading them. And yeah, it all, you know, all that was kind of my childhood. It was quite lucky, you know, and parents kind of really, they spent a lot actually on me, you know. They kind of, I suppose, bought all these art books on how to paint and how to draw, and I've still got them somewhere lying in storage, you know, these how to do watercolors or how to do acrylics or how to do oils. And I think they definitely wanted me to be an artist. I think they were cool with me doing that, but they were very worried, you know, from a kid, that they were like, how's Anthony going to get a job? You know, is there an industry for this? Is there, you know, and they kind of said, look, we think you should go to uni. If you want to pursue this art thing, maybe get like a trade or something behind you, or a career that's a bit more opportunistic. So they kind of, not pushed me, but they suggested I do graphic design. I did go, and I rebelled. I went into visual arts first.
All right.
and they got a bit shitty with that. But then I went back and did graphic design, and I worked as a graphic designer. So for punishment, I was a graphic designer for 8 years. But but I mean, it all you know, everything happens for a reason, as they say. But yeah, but that's pretty much my childhood. You know, lots of all that cool stuff. I think that we all know. You know, Star Wars, Lego.
Yep.
Yeah.
So when did you realize that? I mean, as you were saying, your parents sort of wanted you to take up a bit of a trade by being a graphic designer and all that. When did you kind of realize that you didn't want to do that anymore and you wanted to do actual art
full-time? For me, it was pretty much not all the time. Like, I liked having the graphic design job for it. It was a good experience, and I did get good employment and have benefits of having a job and superannuation and all the benefits that come with it, a kind of a stable job. Well, I wouldn't even say it was stable, but it was a job, you know. But I think I always wanted to do art, but I didn't know how to do it. And I think coming into, I think it was about 2006, after 6 years of it being in the industry, I just had enough of it. I just was sick of graphic design. I always got always got corporate boring design jobs doing like logos for the government.
Yeah.
Working in print, designing print logos for Joe Bloggs, lawn mowing business. And they're not creative jobs at all. And I realized I got to jump out of this. And I didn't know how I was going to get out of it, because I had a really crappy graphic design job. I can't say who the printing company was, but they were horrible. Like, they were like slave drivers. And, you know, I was there for 6 years, I was there for about 3 years. I had other graphic design jobs, which were better, actually.
Yep.
I worked for Diabetes Australia, running their magazine. I worked for a multimedia company doing animation, which was pretty good. But I ended up, in 2006, just going, screw it, I'm going to travel the world and have a break. So I had a bit of money, and I went and traveled, and ended up getting a job before that, though, in sales, because I was waiting for my mates. We kind of planned like an overseas road trip of Europe and that kind of thing. And we kind of, you know, I got a job in sales working at Harvey Norman, which of all places, but that was really good because it gave me a lot of money. And although I didn't like the job, I kind of stuck. I went overseas for about 6 months, enjoyed Europe, saw the sights, it inspired my creativity even more. I was like, wow. I was in, Florence in Italy.
Yep.
And just blown away by the Greco-Roman sculptures, and like actually seeing a statue of Da Vinci in the square of Florence. They've got all the statues of all the great Renaissance artists and stuff. And I was like, this is what I want to do. What the hell am I doing with my life? I'm 26, 27 years old, and I just was living, doing a 9-to-5 grind job that I didn't really like. And I knew, it wasn't going to happen overnight, but it was going to happen. You know? Like those adverts with the hair, you know?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You kind of need to do something, because, I mean, you know, as my family, my parents would say, if you're not enjoying what you're doing, then there's no point in doing it. Try to find something else that you want to do, that you find some kind of love or passion
for. Exactly, yeah. And I got lucky. I got back. I was at Harvey Norman's back in 2007, and then my old mate from uni, Daryl, and he was doing graphic design, or he's lecturing at the uni, and he actually found his wife in Japan. He found his love of his life over there, and he said, "Oh, look, I'm going to Japan to get married, and I've got to stay there for a couple of years so that their family are comfortable with me before he comes back." And he said, "Look, you can have my job at the uni if you like, or at least go for an interview. The position's coming up, but I'm putting you up for a referral." And I did have like 6 years of graphic design experience, and I knew a lot about computers and printing and all that, and it was kind of like an academic support role with it. And I went for the uni, and I got a job there in 2007, started teaching and started doing academic support, and it was a better job. I enjoyed it a lot more. I enjoyed the people. It wasn't like I was a leading artist then, but I had more time for art. Because I was at the uni for 3 or 4 days, it wasn't the most amazing job. It was a good job. It was fun. The people were nice.
Yep.
The students were nice, lecturing. You know, there's always an element to a job that you don't like. The chore, of course, is marking assignments. I hate judging other people's art or other people's design, because you feel like a bit of an ass doing that. But yeah, it has to be done, because you got to mark students and based on criteria, which we did. You know, obviously there's always criteria in design.
Well, believe me, being Marcy and I being film critics, you know, we know what that's like as well.
Yeah. Because,
you know, we have to be, like, whether it's a positive review or a negative review, we always try to be constructive as much as we possibly can.
Exactly, yeah. And that's what teaching is like as well. And And it's good because, you know, I learnt a lot about people skills. I learnt a lot about, got back into design and art again, and I realised I really want to do art. I bumped into a guy called Simon Scales, who is the creator of the school called Concept Design Workshop Australia in South Australia. It's actually just won an award, some international award, for being one of the world's leading concept art schools for films and games. And Simon actually went to uni with me in 2000. We studied together. I did visual art and graphic design, but he saw my painting. He's like, you should be doing illustration with me. You know, he saw my fine art and stuff. But he was a brilliant illustrator, and he was doing kids' books for years. And then he loved kids' books, but he wanted to do something more exciting for him. And he ended up training with the Concept Design Academy in California, which is the top concept artist school on film and games, and all the AAA movies and games you see, all the artists come out of there pretty much. So he actually went and did a course there, came back to South Australia, was teaching with me. We both, like, it was weird, it was just like timing. In 2008 we were teaching together. I was teaching graphic design, he was teaching, and I was teaching animation. I was actually teaching animation because I do know, I kind of got my first gig being a 2D animator. So that was in the multimedia company. So he saw that I was still passionate about the art, and I was doing graphic design and animation, and we're talking about illustration. He was lecturing at the uni illustration, and because he was obviously way better than me at the time, and he's still pretty good. He's still an awesome illustrator. So, and me and Simon were talking, and he goes, "Oh, have you heard about this thing called concept art?" And I'm like, "What? What's this? You know, have you heard of concept illustration or concept art?" I'm like, "I know of illustration, like kids' books. I only knew about, you know, comics or kids' books and stuff, but I didn't realize that there was this another field of called concept art, which everyone, pretty much most people know about now, but it's like the art that, the pre-visualization or the concept art that happens before a movie or a video game is being made, or whatever other type of game, a tabletop or even a theme park. They even hire concept artists to do visualizations of roller coaster rides or designs or ideas of what a theme park might look like. And there's money in it, you know, there's a career. It's actually a known career, and it's getting bigger because of what happened was in 2006, you know, the video game industry exploded with PlayStation 3 coming out. There's all these game titles coming out. And yeah, someone goes, "I think this is kind of what you want to do." Like, well, he didn't say that to me. He was like, you know, this is like you, in a way, like you're doing fine art, you study fine art, you've done graphics.
Yep.
Why not mesh the skills and go into that? So I studied a master's in illustration. And I think it was like I knew I wanted to be an artist in 2006, but I really knew that I wanted to be an illustrator and concept artist in 2008, which was almost 10 years ago. Wow, shit, 9 years, man. Where has the time gone? No,
don't worry. I wonder that every single day of my life.
Oh god. So yeah, 2006, man. It's been like an 11-year journey for me since 2006 when I had to leave the printing company, and it's been, I suppose, a wild ride. It has been a struggle to get there, but it's safe to say it's getting really good now. There's been some amazing projects I've worked on and that. So
yeah, I was just about to say, can you talk about any of the projects or companies that you've worked on as a concept artist?
Yeah, for sure. I've also done comics as well, so we can talk about that in a minute. But I've worked on a whole range of stuff. I started like in 2010. So what I did after Simon said, "Oh yeah, this is what you should be doing," and I'm like, "Yeah, this is what I want to do," because he showed me this awesome book on concept art. I ended up deciding to study a master's. So while I was lecturing, I was doing a master's of illustration for about 2 years. And so I was teaching students and also learning on the side. And in 2009 or about 2010, I started getting some freelance work doing, I think, a company called Tapjoy. They were like a mobile game development company in Canada. They were asking me to do animations and game assets. I already had the 2D animation skills in Flash and that, but they were asking me to illustrate them more and do more illustrative animations, and that's, that kind of grew from there. Then after doing the animation for Tapjoy, I kind of got this, I got a few little gigs doing film jobs for people, like I think Matthew Holmes, who did The Legend of Ben Hall, which is an Australian film that came out last year. I did some concept art for his stuff called Artifice in Melbourne that won a short feature film award. Short film feature award. I did some concept art for that. But before, I also worked on some projects with him and Wolf Creek Productions, which are, I believe, are shelved right now.
Yeah.
So we don't know what's happening with them, but they're horror films. One of them was called Territorial Consortium. up. It was meant to be out by now, but I don't know. Sometimes when you're working in the film industry, you might work on something and get shelved, or they might release it later.
Yeah.
You don't know when they're going to do it. It depends on funding. So that was like a horror film that I worked on about the Bunyip. And that was my first kind of start. And then I had that folio of the stuff that I was doing. I also won awards in America with the Gnomon Workshop. And having won awards with Gnomon Workshop, which was a training ground for concept artists and CG Hub and ConceptArt.org, and having done a few film jobs and a few mobile phone game things, it kind of then blew out of proportion. In 2013, I got offered to work on the video game The Path of Exile.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that is my, I suppose my claim to fame. Whenever I say to gamers, like, have you heard of Path of Exile? Most people have.
Yep.
It's a New Zealand-based action RPG, and I was on it for about a year on and off, just doing art work for them, like doing game assets, in-game graphics, doing a bit of concept art, doing weapon designs, weapon props, just concept art here and there for them. And they had an insanely popular Kickstarter. They raised like a few million, I think. And part of the rewards was if you backed the game and you spent a lot of money, you got your own custom graphic. So guess who did all of them? Me. So I got the grunt work, which is fine because it was a great experience and I learned a lot. And it was a combination of skills. I was doing illustration with Photoshop, kit bashing, with painting in Photoshop over photos and blending it and creating. You have to push them out fast. You know, you're looking at pushing 3 assets out a day or more sometimes. But it had revisions, and most of the people, the fans of Path of Exile, loved it, and so did they. Worked with Eric Olofsson for about a year. He was the creator of Path of Exile in Auckland. But it's like the type of game that it is. It's like action RPG, like Diablo.
Yep.
But it's very customizable. It's actually, I think, I love Diablo. I'm a Diablo fan. I don't want to say anything bad about Diablo, but I like Path of Exile better. I suppose I'm biased because I worked on it.
You totally are.
I totally am. But I don't know, for me, it's just, I like the idea of, like, Diablo 1 and 2 had that customization, a little bit of customization, whereas Diablo 3 feels like it's just copy-clone, copy-paste characters. And it doesn't, for me, it's a great game. I think the gameplay's good. It's got a lot of content in Diablo. I like the characters. I love the story arc and everything. But for me, if Diablo 3 had a little bit more customization in it, like, or an expansion did, I'd just be all over it again, you know?
Yep.
And that's what Path of Exile offered. It's a New Zealand game. It's got a Māori fighter in it, in there, and a witch. So it's got like a bit of different cultures in there. And it's, every time I mention it at a con or people ask me, what have you done? Or I show them some Path of Exile art that I've worked on, and, you know, it blows people away. And I suppose for me, it was a dream. It was one of the dream projects that I worked on that I really enjoyed. And, you know, next to doing your own project, it was probably one of the top projects. It was very laid back. And it's great, you know, to have that as your first entry into the industry, into AAA games, and get, you know, and yeah. So, and then I also, after that, about 2014, Disney came to me.
Ooh.
Yeah, so that all happened by chance. So what happened was, it was by chance and it wasn't. Because, like, as an illustrator, I actually left the uni by about 2011. I was enrolled in a PhD, and I was doing a PhD on the Uncanny Valley, which is about, it's all about to do with film and games. How, you know how, like, with Princess Leia?
Yep. I know about the Uncanny Valley. Is it like,
how things look odd?
Look odd when you try to make them as realistic as possible.
And that kind of happened with Princess Leia in the last movie that she was in,
Rogue One, yeah.
Yeah, and I was researching that on how to solve that problem, but I pulled out of that PhD because I didn't want to become an academic. I was getting a lot of freelance work in 2011 because I just finished my master's. And also I just found academic, like, I don't know, maybe when I'm an old fart, I'll go back to academia and just sit with my books and write research. But the problem when you become an academic is you're writing research and you're just marking people's stuff. People argue that there's creativity in writing research papers, and there is an element of creativity, I agree. Yeah. But for me, it's not as creative as being an artist or an illustrator or a concept artist. So for me, I left the uni in 2011, started getting freelance work in 2012. And for me, it was, winning all those awards, getting, you know, only being in industry since like 2012, 13, 14, I got the job with Disney. I got it was about a 4-month contract. But the way that happened was, when I first started freelancing, I was, you know, I was panicking because I was like, well, I left the uni. They offered me, they left me with one subject. I could still teach one subject to get a bit of an income. But I decided to leave it, to leave that mid-2012. Mm-hmm. I said, no, I don't want that at all. I want to just go straight into this. And was, which was kind of, it was very daunting because it's very hard to make it on your own. So since 2012, I've been on my own doing art. And I just sent out emails in 2012 to all these studios, every single game studio in Australia, in America, in Europe. And one of them I did send an email to was a Brisbane studio called Liquid Development.
Yep.
And anyway, that was in 2012 or early 2013. And they emailed me back in 2014. They go, oh, we've looked at your website. You know, we've finally got to your email. And we think you're a fit for a job. You're the fit for the job. And they, obviously, I had applied years ago, but they said that wasn't my application back then. That they just happened to stumble across me again. Like, my website must have been on Google. It must have been getting a lot of searches or hits. They saw that the work was better or updated, because in 2012, I mustn't have gotten in with them, obviously, because it's 2 years later. but 2014, they looked at it, and they said, oh, yeah, we want you to do a contract to work on environments for the video game Disney Worlds, just doing backgrounds for that on the Nintendo. And that was fun. It was like a four-month intense project. It was very intense, so tiring, but it was fun. It was passionate. Yeah, and I just did like a whole bunch of environment designs. I designed worlds, different types of worlds that Mickey Mouse would venture into. And that was cool. I mean, it's great to say that I've done a Disney project, you know. It's only a four-month project. It was with Disney in Japan.
Yep.
Because obviously Japan being close to Australia in Brisbane, it was a similar time zone.
Yep.
And then I'd get all the work in Adelaide. But for me, it's like, I've definitely worked for Disney, but it's part of Liquid Development. It's their baby, you know, and I was there just for support. But, you know, it's just, it was a great second project to work on, you know, and it was an amazing experience. And I learned a lot. And now when I do freelance work, I've learned even more, like how to, I suppose, work with clients and work better and work to deadlines and all that sort of stuff. And then after that, or throughout that, actually, before then, I actually got in touch with another artist in America called Rob, and he gave me some work on a comic book. So we're talking about comics.
Yep.
So back to comics. I actually got my first comic book gig with Rob Richardson, being a colorist for him.
Yep.
On a comic book series called The Adventures of Lightning Rod. It actually was a one shot. It didn't go very far. It was like one or half a graphic novel or whatever.
Yep.
It was called Adventures of Lightning Rod and Shonen Double Feature. So the other side was about, I think it was like a black samurai chick.
Yep.
And the other side was The Adventures of Lightning Rod, and we did that one. And that was an amazing experience, again, because I learned how to do comics. I learned the process, and I worked with Robbie, and Rob worked together. Rob Richardson, it was so funny. We got this love-hate relationship, me and Rob. It's like, kind of like me and you, Bede.
Oh, well, the listeners out there don't need to hear about this part.
What you were saying about after this podcast, it'll all go downhill, mate.
Yes, exactly. I'm trying to make this as professional as possible. Okay, Anthony,
anyway.
Anyways, continue with that.
So with Rob, the way I met him was in 2009 when I was doing my masters. I was doing competitions with the Gnomon Workshop. So I would enter in art contests nearly every second month. They had a topic. One might have been Thor, or one might have been Lord of the Rings, a new set for Lord of the Rings, or design this. And he won them, and then I'd come, like, I wouldn't win. He actually started giving me tips on getting better as an artist. Yep. So he became a mentor, and then I ended up I ended up winning a few. I won Kowloon, the award on Kowloon.
Yeah.
Then I did a Halloween painting. I won an award on that.
Yeah.
Then I won the Abandoned Asylum, won an award. And then the final one was Castle Highlands, which is actually one of our worlds for the comic. And Rob also won quite a few awards. And so it was like this kind of running competition where it was like, I'm going to kick your ass, or you're going to kick my ass, or who's going to get the award this month? And it was like, who's going to get the most awards all up? And I think we're both even. We both have won 4 now on the Gnomon Workshop. But that's like being judged by Neville Page.
Yep.
He's one of the judges of it. So I don't know if you know who Neville Page is.
I've heard of Neville Page.
Yeah, he's actually like the makeup and he's a makeup artist and a concept artist, and he did all the Star Trek. He actually was interviewed on the Star Trek Discovery show. So yeah, so he's seen my work.
And I think I remember now that you're talking about him. I do, because I know he did like creature designs on Cloverfield. Did some I think he did Watchmen as well. Yeah. I think, and a few, and of course the J.J. Abrams Star Trek film. So
yeah, so he's a top bloke. He actually, we're friends on Facebook, but he's seen my work and stuff like that. So I just can't wait to go to America eventually one day with a folio, my folio, and just, I suppose, just network and go to a con. And my goal is to go there and have fun, but just to meet, go to California probably, because that's where all the concept art's happening, and do a con there, hopefully.
Yeah, maybe like San Diego Comic-Con or something
Like that. I don't know about that one, because that one's a bit too big, and I think I need something more focused on fantasy. So I'm kind of researching like whether I do IluxCon or Spectrum Art Live. I might do like, Spectrum Art Live is all about fantasy art, and IluxCon's about illustration. So it's, I've got to decide which one I do next year, or which, or depends which one I get into, but then I maybe do a holiday straight after and go to California and network, organize, set up meetings with people there. So, you know, it's all happening there. You know, it's still happening here. We've got, you know, Australia's got a lot of stuff happening too, but obviously, you know, America's where the source of it all is, you know, as you know. So, but yeah, that's kind of what I've done. Like, that's the standout projects. So I have worked on as a book illustrator book cover artist on Frank Wood's books. He's he does a whole series of Halloween books.
Yep.
So, and he loved the work that I did for him, and he did Jack and the Giants. I did art on that. So I've worked at, like, on doing art for several authors, and just doing client work here and there. So, you know, that's pretty much it. You know, at the moment, I mean, that's 2012. That's about, well, there's more work than that, because I did do other jobs, but that's about 5 years of freelance work, you know, and I mean, I wish I did, wish I were more clients, I could say, but, you know, that's kind of, time just runs out, you know, you work on, you know, that Path of Exile was a year, you know, Disney was 4 months, and the book covers was another 6 months, so there's 2 years, and then you're working on the comics for a couple of years with Rob.
Yep.
So that all adds up, that's 4 years, and then I've been doing my own stuff too, as you know, so all my other stuff. So really, like, to get into the industry in 2012, you know, and we're now 2017, 5 years, it has been a wild ride, and there's been a lot of great opportunities, a lot of ups, a lot of ups, a little bit of downs, but the ups make up for the downs. Yep. And honestly, I've never been happier. You know, I have freedom. You know, I can say no to a gig if I don't want it. You know, I get, you know, to take a day off when I want to, or take a week off if I've got free time. If there's nothing on, I can take a week off.
Yep.
You know, so that's a good thing. You know, I might take tomorrow off. You know, go to the city. you know, do what I want. You know, so that's a benefit of being a freelance artist, and. You know, getting to travel and enjoy other cities, and, you know, see different things, see different sights. But yeah, so anything else you want to ask?
Oh, I was going to ask about, because at the moment, as you were talking about comic books, you currently just created your own one. And can you tell us a bit about the comic itself, but also how you came up with it, your influences, and of course, tell us what it's about.
All right, cool. Yeah, so obviously, I was freelancing in 2012, 13, 14, and about 15, I was like, well, I started doing cons, I did comic conventions, and fans love my art, and then they'd see these fantasy paintings, and I'm like, what's this from? People were like, asking, what's this from? And I said, it's my own story, and they're like, oh, when's this story coming out? And I'm like, oh, shit, I haven't written it yet. So what happened was, the way I create is I start with paintings, and they inspire ideas.
Yep.
And, well, sometimes I do write, and that inspires the painting. But what actually ended up happening was, after doing comic conventions, that helped me. Like, freelancing was very tough, because you're just relying on one income. Your salary cap's based on your time.
Yeah.
You can only do so much work. You know, you can only take on, say, 24 good paintings a year. You know what I mean? Or whatever it is. If you do one a week, 50 good paintings a year. You know, and you work out the math. I don't think everyone can even afford $1,000, but that's, you know, it's only 50 grand.
Yeah.
And if you've got to live off that, can be very tough. It's a pretty, it's an average salary. So for me, I kind of went into doing cons, and I decided to start selling my art, my original art. Some of the clients allowed me to sell their stuff. I had the award-winning art from Nomen Workshop, so I was able to sell that. Mm-hmm. I've always been writing. Like, it's really weird. I've always been writing comics. As a teenager, I started writing all these weird space science fiction kind of space and alien stories, and I did a fantasy one. So I've always loved science fiction. I've always loved fantasy, but fantasy, sci-fi, and horror have kind of been the things that I really like.
Yeah.
They're the three genres that have always been my passion. And I've been, I started dabbling in the script. I started writing the script about these mages, these dream magicians, about these dream magicians that can teleport through people's dreams, through time. They can basically, I suppose, dream up stuff when it comes to reality, enter in people's dreams, play with their mind, stuff like that. And I started writing a script, and it was obviously the Luminous Ages script. And I showed the script to, I just showed a draft without, I didn't name it anything. Like, it was actually going to be called the Captivary, because the three schools of dream magicians are the Captivaries, the Luminary, and the Chosen.
Yeah.
And I wrote a story about a luminary, a mother called Silver the Grey, and a boy called Thrakos, who was a Captivary. And I wrote their own separate stories, and then I started creating this universe and started creating all this stuff, and I started to piece it together myself. And then I showed Rob the script, and I said to him, "Oh, what do you think of this?" I was going to call it Captivary Ages, or something weird like that, Captivary Mages or something weird. And then I was talking to Rob, and he saw it, and he goes, "Oh, man, this is really cool. Like, there's something in this." Like, and I can't tell you what the powers are, because the Luminary and the Captivaries and the Chosen, what they do and the way they use their powers is actually quite unique in terms of a comic book universe. No one's actually kind of done it like this before. There are similarities in other comic book worlds, but what Captivaries and Luminaries do and Chosen do is quite unique. And I showed Rob, and he's like, "Dude, I'm on this." Like, he was my mentor. I was working for him. I was his, and now it's flipped. The tables have turned, and now he's helping me and working for me on Luminous Ages. So he's also partnered up on the comic. Yeah. So he's invested his time and money into helping making this happen as well, which is amazing. So it's my baby. I created it all, but Rob's come on board as another comic book artist on it, and he's like partnered on it. Mm-hmm. Should I say?
So
we did this. He looked at it, and that was in 2015, and we just since late 2015, I got the script together. I've written about three graphic novels worth of script, and outlines, and I've written three graphic novels worth of outlines and script, and I've got the first two graphic novels written. We did issue 1, 2, and 3 in 2015 and 16.
Mm-hmm.
2015 and 16, so we did issue 1 and 2. We've done issue 3 this year, and I've started doing issue 4 as a watercolor edition.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a lot of the watercolor paintings done for the 4th issue this year, so we've done 2 issues this year. And I suppose, it's been, we're 4 issues in. The first graphic novel is going to be probably 7 or 8 issues. It's massive.
Yep.
So it's actually like a 160 page book. By the time we find, because at the moment it's about, I'll tell you what it's about in a minute, but we'll go into the influences, but it's huge. And by the time the main characters discover what the Luminary and the Captivaries do, it takes a while, to build up the world, to show all these amazing characters. It's kind of like Game of Thrones, where you've got all these subplots happening.
Yeah.
And it's not, I didn't even intentionally want to do it like Game of Thrones. It wasn't that. It's just, this is how my mind works.
Mm.
I was inspired by, as a kid, watching The Labyrinth, watching Dark Crystal, watching Neverending Story, all that sort of stuff. So that influenced my taste in fantasy. Also, yep. Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at Lord of the Rings and all these extra, all these characters and stuff. And then Game of Thrones came about, in 2012 or 13, whatever it was. And
yep.
And that kind of blew my mind, and I'm thinking, this is like what I want to create. I wasn't ripping them off, but I was like, wow, this is exactly kind of in the vein of my style. But Luminous Ages isn't as gritty. It's not as violent. Well, it's obviously got fantasy violence, but it's not like blood and gore and sex.
Well, having read the issues of the comic book you've done so far, what I love about the comic is that it's such a colourful and vibrant world that you've created, and in the grand scheme of Aussie comic books that are out there at the moment, it's just completely one of a kind. Like, there's nothing out there.
Thanks,
like,
man. Thanks, man. Yeah, that's what we're trying to do. And I think my influences being, what's influenced the comic book is my upbringing as well, my cultural upbringing. Being from Cyprus, it's kind of in the center of the world of Egypt, of the Middle East, of Europe, of Turkey and Greece and all those countries. And I studied a lot of those mythologies. And so we're going back to the influences. What's influenced Luminous Ages is those cultures, you know, like even like English culture, looking at Merlin and the wizard, the wizard and King Arthur, and looking at, you know, Hercules and Cadmus, the Phoenician warrior who slayed the dragon, and Jason and the Argonauts. All those sort of mythologies have inspired this series, you know what I mean? So that I grew up with mythology. I was told those stories as a kid. Like, my grandfather would sit me down and tell me about Hercules, or he'd tell me about all these, like, or so even like, and not to get too religious, but, you know, my grandparents were old, and, you know, they come from a different era, you know, they were Christian, but they would tell me about Saint George and the dragon.
Yeah,
you know, and they believed it was real. You know what I mean? And for me, it was like, how can I put that into my stories? That passion or that storytelling of that there really were dragons. They did exist, you know, and they were, you know, and there were these heroes that saved people from danger, you know. And so for me, I that has influenced my work. And obviously surrealism, you know, well, I mean, I'm trying to think of, you know, like my influences are like Guillermo del Toro. I should say it probably in Spanish, Guillermo del Toro, you know. So I love his work. I love Pan's Labyrinth. I love the freaky, you know, guys with the eyes in their hands. The pale man. And just that stuff like that in the labyrinth, that's the vibe we're putting into the comic. And it's kind of already there, but once we get into our labyrinth, you'll see it's got the Greek freaky stuff in it, you know, like weird kind of creatures with eyes on their backs or 20 heads, you know, because all that stuff, that really weird primal mythology actually comes from, you know, very ancient cultures like your Egyptian, your Greek, the Sumerian cultures, you know, even India, you know, they have a lot of these weird kind of creatures, you know. You know, elephants with wings and stuff and all that sort of stuff. And that's the kind of thing that I want to put back into that, you know, I want people to be immersed into this fantasy rich world that I've created and the characters. I want people to be immersed and emotionally attached to those characters. I want people to go, you know, crap, I feel for Thakos or I feel for his mum, or I want to be buddies with Leo, you know, or whatever it is. Like, I want people to feel something when they're reading that. And this is the thing, this is why I believe in creating a huge cast like Game of Thrones, is because some people will connect with some characters, some people might not connect with other characters, and I want to put something in there for everyone, you know. And it's also, writing is kind of an expression of life in a way, you know, I write a lot, like a lot of my writing and my characters are based on real people that I meet, you know, and like, you know, some of the characters are based on me, some of them are based on family, some are based on friends. Yeah. Some of them are just some weird strangers that I might meet and I think, wow, or a story I hear about someone that's done something amazing.
Yep.
You know, or a philosopher in ancient times. You know what I mean? Like, there's, I think, one of the most inspiring characters to me would be Zoroastro of Persia. He was a religious leader, or I suppose like a philosopher in Persia, but he was actually known as the Magi of Persia. He was a magician at that time. So, and that's like, you know, whatever, 4,000 or 5,000 years BC, and even before Merlin and all that. And Zoroastro, he had three kind of, the Magi's of Persia look to the stars, and they look for, you know, they actually were charting the stars, and they did astrology. Like, they could see astronomy, sorry, not astrology. They could see with astronomy where they were mapping stars back then, even before the ancient Greeks.
Yep.
And his philosophy as well, he had like guides of how to live life, you know, and I try to aspire towards that, you know. His three tenets or three words of wisdom are, you know, think good thoughts, speak good thoughts, and do good things. You know, that's basically the philosophy of the Zoroastrian religion.
Yeah.
You know, where these magicians from ancient Persia, and not like you tell people about that at Comic Con or Supernova, and they're looking at you, they've never heard of that, because we're so ingrained in the Western world, and there's nothing wrong with it. Like, we all know about Merlin and we know about Gandalf, and we know about, you know, all the wizards from the Western world, and that's brilliant, because we've got them in our comic as well.
Yeah.
But we're putting a twist on them.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Merlin got trained by Zoroastro of Persia. You know, Merlin was, you know, what, you know, 5,000 500 AD or whatever.
Yep.
But maybe Zoroastro teleported. He sensed a disturbance in the dream force, because it's all about dream magic in our comic. So maybe he sensed that in the, you know, that he, this was going to happen in the future, and we think maybe Zoroastro will travel through a dream time portal.
Yep.
To help Merlin as a boy to master his powers of being a wizard, you know. So it's about, you know, our comic. What I want to do with Luminous Ages is, you know, I love all the other stuff, like the Marvel comics, the Lord of the Rings. Like I said, I love it all, but something that I always find that is missing is, you know, we don't have enough women lead characters. We don't have enough lead characters from different cultural backgrounds. And it's not about being, it's not about for me about being politically correct. It's not about that, you know, and there's nothing wrong with being that, but it's about me. It's about cultural representation. It's about doing something different. How can you do that? Something different? Let's put different types of characters. Let's tell something different.
Yeah.
And it's about, I'm just sick of the, I suppose, the tropes and the norms in storytelling. And I don't know. I mean, hopefully Hollywood will pick up on it and they adapt it and do something good with it. You know, I want to be guiding them if they do pick it up, because I don't want it to be you know, whitewashed or anything like that, you know. But it's about, you know, we want characters, you know, obviously we're going to have wizards from England and then or druids from England. And we're going to have characters from the Middle East. We're going to have characters from, you know, shamans from Africa and all that sort of cool stuff all tied into this. And it is Luminous Ages. I'll make it clear, you know, we'll go into what it's all about, but Luminous Ages, the actual planet, is the first ever planet is called Equatoria, right? And that's where dreams manifest into reality really easily. And that's where dream wizards, their powers are so powerful, you know, and they craft dream weapons, dream stones, dream staffs, dream swords, shields, weapons, artifacts, cloaks, all that sort of stuff. And so even a normal human who's in that world, or a character that isn't born of dream magic, so a lot of characters are born with dream magic in them. There's six kind of species that are. That's the dragons, most of the humans, the beast kind, which is like felines, like cat people.
Yep.
Then you have demons, they're born with dream magic. So are angels, and then there's the titans. So they're the six major species types that can craft dream magic, but sometimes it's crossbreeds. They do crossbreed and they create offspring that are a mixture of things that can also still be dream wizards. But for, like, say, some humans can be born, or demons can be born with no dream magic. They're born not with those powers. You know, they're not part of the royal bloodline. So what actually happens is those people may craft weapons and wield amazing armor that's got dream magic and does a similar things as the wizards. But what actually happens in Equatoria, the planet, the dream planet, is throughout, that was the first planet that was ever created. So that's in the it's called Luminous Ages because it's many ages of mythology. What happened is in Equatoria, that was the first ever planet that was created where dream magic, in the Big Bang, after the Big Bang, it was the first planet ever. Dreams come into reality really fast, like the movie The Secret. You know, you imagine it comes into reality. And what ends up happening is throughout our history, the battles that are happening on Equatoria, they escaped and they entered Earth realm. So these dragons escaped and entered our history, and that's why there were dragons in human history, because they came from Equatoria.
Yep.
And they came in our different ages of mythology, you know, throughout different parts of human history. And some of them were good. Some of them were good dragons that escaped the Nightmare Mages, who are the villains. And some of them are evil that got pushed out, and then they were wreaked havoc upon Earth. You know? So, yeah, the tying in Earth mythology will be like the add-on. There's different issues. We'll probably start with Cadmus. We will actually have a comic called Cadmus, issue one. Which won't be... It'll be a Luminous Ages story on the inside cover, but it'll be Cadmus. It'll be the story of the Phoenician prince who became a warrior, who ended up fighting with Jason and the Argonauts to take down dragons in the Middle East. So he's a Phoenician prince from Lebanon, that area. So not many people actually even know about Cadmus the Monster Slayer. People know about Cadmus from, say, you know, DC Comics and Supergirl and all that. Like, you know, that obviously, again, people use those names. A lot of the West uses ancient Greek or Middle Eastern words in their storytelling, but they don't. They obviously make their own version, which is cool, you know. But you know, we're actually going back to the source,
yep.
But we're reviving it in a more, I suppose, creative way, or I wouldn't say more, I don't know about more creative, because that's subjective, I suppose, but it's just done in a different way. Yeah. We're still giving justice to the story of Amazons and, say, Cadmus and Spartans and whatever, say, even, you know, shamans or, you know, Native American culture, you know, all those sort of, like, mythologies, all those stories, we're giving justice to them, but we're saying, what if they had dream magic? What if they could cast these spells and dream and do these things? So there's got that twist to it. So we're not ruining the mythology. We're actually just making it, I think we're just making it a little bit more fancy. That's what we're doing. But that will be side issues. So we'll have, like, you know, we'll have an episode issue with Merlin, you know, so it'll be issue one of Merlin, and it'll be a Luminous Ages story on the inside cover. So, you know, it's part of the series. But then there's the whole storyline of what's happening in the Luminous Ages universe with all our characters, like Thrakos, Lena of the Light, Silver the Grey, Leo, Gaius, all the whole cast of these creatures and characters. They're still doing stuff in their own universe, but then we might have them, you know, in one episode they escape to Earth, or they enter this portal, and they don't know what it is, but it's Earth, and they might even come to our future to warn us of danger now. Of what's happening to our environment, warning us of not to pollute the earth. You know what I mean? So it's kind of got, but I don't know how this, I think I've, if someone came to me and said, what's your elevator pitch on Luminous Ages on the storybook? It's a fantasy comic book series with dragons and dream magic. And it's basically Game of Thrones meets Captain Planet and mythology.
Okay, now this will be right there. Captain Planet meets Game of Thrones. That just sounds like the two most unlikeliest things you could ever imagine being mixed together. And now I kind of want to see
what that's about. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
And what did I say? What was the third one? I said Game of Thrones
meets mythology. Yeah.
Yeah, and with mythology. Yeah, of course. So, yeah, that's pretty much Luminous Ages. That's, you know, it's evolving, it's growing, it's getting great reviews. We're on, you can look at it, read some of the comic for free at www.luminousages.com. So you can actually check it out there. We are on Webtoons as well, and we're getting a lot of people reading it there and subscribers there. We're on Patreon. And I think we're doing something else right now. What is it?
Yeah, well, I was about to say, like, at the moment, you're just about to start a Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah, well, I think it's up now. I think we've got...
Oh, well, it would be up right now at the time of the release of this episode, but it hasn't yet as we're recording, but it is as this episode's online. But can you please tell us about this Kickstarter campaign?
For sure. So, Luminous Ages, it's on Kickstarter right now. We're doing issue 1 to 3. We have done, like I said, I've done issue 4. But issue 4 is going to be a stretch goal. We're hoping we hit $12,000 to cover my time on making the comic. To take 2 months to finish off issue 4. Like, the watercolor pages are done, but I still got to scan them in. I've got to letter them. I have to do the proofing on the editing, on the writing. I've got an editor in Adelaide, Eleanor. She does my editing. And got Rob. Rob's got to look at the artwork. So we're on Kickstarter now to help fund a print run of issue 1, 2, 3, possibly 4. Exciting thing about it is over November, from November 1 to 30, Kickstarter is doing this amazing promotion called Commissions Kickstarters. So if you're on Kickstarter and your project involves a lot of commissions, which mine always do, for some reason, whenever I do a Kickstarter, I always have commissions for people, and we usually get a lot of them. But we've got these amazing, we've decided to go, it's a commission comic. So you get a chance to be in the Labyrinth in issue 3. You saw that Labyrinth. You probably read it. In that, we're going to actually have the next few pages shows the markets, and Thrakos is talking to Arcturus about gearing up to go into that Labyrinth. And, you know, you see there's going to be this market scene in the entrance of the Labyrinth, and there's a chance for you to be in the comic for about, I think, only like $270. You can have your face painted into the comic as a character, like a human character, or it could be something else. It could be you as the grumpy cat, or I don't know.
Just find the most terrible character and just put my face on it.
So. All right, we'll put terrible Aussie on there with a Cobra hat or something.
Exactly.
We've got to be careful that we've got to make sure it, like, makes sense.
It has to make sense in the universe of what the story is.
Yeah, well, it has to just be fantasy or mythology.
Yeah, exactly. So
if it makes sense within fantasy and mythology, then we can put you in there.
Yeah, you can't have like a rock star just pop in.
We can't have you have as like a Star Trek character in the page.
I was thinking more Kiss, but you know.
Yeah, look, mate, I don't care about your fantasies and desires. You said fantasy commissions, but that's not one of them, all
right? Okay, I'll let it slide for now. But you're breaking my heart, Anthony, so.
I'm sorry, B. I'm so sorry, mate. The exciting thing is you get, there's so many commission tiers, so even if you can't afford $277 to be in the comic, you get to be published, you know, immortalized forever.
Yep.
The other exciting thing is we have commissions for like $67 for a black and white ink with my comic.
Ooh.
So you get to have a black and white ink of six different types of creatures, like the six different races in the comic, or species, yep. Should I say species? So we have dryads, you can be in a demon, baby dragon, an adult dragon ink, mm-hmm. a mermaid, and a wolf creature or whatever it is that you like, an animal type of creature. So there's six options there, and then about like from $90 you can get a color ink drawing. These are A5s, of course, and then we have obviously got watercolors with A4s, their original paintings, and then you can have digital painting done. And the commissions that we do, the high up commissions, are from A4 watercolor and upwards, and the digital paintings, you get to go into a Luminous Ages comic art book. So it's a fourth comic book. It's a fifth comic book.
Yep.
But you have your character, so you can commission a character. You can say, hey, I want to get... it's non-humanoid, because I'm kind of over people. Drawing people gets boring.
Yep.
No offense, Pete.
No. I'm giving you the middle finger right in my head right now.
Yeah, as I would say. But I suppose it's not that I do excel at drawing humans and I can draw them well, but I think it's just, for me, it's not as creative.
Mm.
I find drawing dragons or drawing, a nine-tailed fox or a werewolf or whatever fantasy creature, anything from mythology, I find that more fascinating. So we've opened it up that it's only, you know, mythology or fantasy creatures, mm-hmm. non-humanoid, can be a demon, you know. I don't really want to do angels because people, like, I really want to go towards more, if I start doing more angels, there's an artist called Peter Moorbacker who's influenced me a lot. He's been doing it for a while. He works for Magic the Gathering and he does these amazing angels. They're very surreal. They're not even like humans.
Yep.
You know, they're like these weird, like you might get a face of a human and it's hovering over to the left, and then you have like 10 arms and you have like this weird triangle for a body, and then like half a leg popping out, and then this weird dragon tail, and then these ten wings, kind of like a picture from the Bible. You know, like in Revelations when it talks about all these weird kind of creatures coming out in Doomsday or in the last day. He does stuff like that, and that's the sort of angels that I want to create in our universe too. I'm sick of the kind of humanoid and to be honest with you, I really prefer to be creative with it. That's what I want. So, but everyone has a chance to get a creature designed of his choice, a dragon, at different levels, from about $377 for an A4 color watercolor original painting.
Yep.
And I can design a character of your choice that's from fantasy or mythology, or a character that you might think would work in our series. We do digital paintings. We can do a digital character for about $777, mm-hmm. and you get a canvas with that.
Yep.
And we're also doing a big epic creature in a world, or you could actually commission a fantasy scene of your choice,
yep.
or mythology scene of your choice. So you can commission maybe a Japanese temple, or a Greek Parthenon, or something like that. Or you could have a Minotaur fighting in the labyrinth.
Yep.
You know, or whatever it is that you want to commission, as long as it's fantasy and mythology, I'll do it as part of this Kickstarter. Mm. But there are spots that are limited. Mm. By now, this is going live the day after we launch. But who knows? Maybe some of the spots have already filled up. But get in as soon as you can. I'll paint it for you. We get them all done. You'll get access to the comic to issue 1, 2, and 3 in December. So although we're doing it now, December, everyone will get the comics digitally.
Yep.
And then once issue 4 is finished, we'll send everything to print, and it should be, the print versions will be out by April.
Yep.
Before May. I'm hoping even by March. Just depends on my manufacturer and how many we have to print.
Yep.
But everyone will have access to the digital files, issue 1, 2, 3, and even issue 4 might be done by February, so you have access to that as well. If you back the Kickstarter, you get it before everyone else. Mm-hmm. And obviously, Patreons get it, and Patreons get a little bit of a bonus for backing my Patreon and Kickstarter. Patrons are going to be getting little A5 sketches, just given if they've bought any of my goods on Patreon, they get a little A5 commission, whatever, just a random doodle. And that could be like a little creature that I sketch in my sketchbook or something really cool. So, you know, if you're on my Patreon, expect to get one of them sent in the mail over the period of, you know, November, December, January. Yeah, so that's basically what it's about. We're hoping it'll cover the cost of the comics, where the goal is about 4,500. And we've got amazing stretch goals. One thing we're doing is we're doing stickers anyway. You can actually get little dragon stickers for if you want to put, you know, on your books or whatever, or for kids. They're great for kids as presents for Christmas or whatever. We have a collector card, a rare collector card for our card game.
Yep.
So you can get a golden dragon. And also, one of the stretch goals, we are going to, on the project, it states that there's going to be a digital colouring in book. So you can print off the digital file with some of the inks that we've done on the Kickstarter or past inks. So you get a colouring in book, at least 24 pages, I think it is. So you get to do you get your own Luminous Ages colouring in book, digital file. And then if we hit an amazing stretch goal, we'll probably print that colouring in book. So if you upgrade your pledge by $10 or $15, or we create a special tier that people can move to, where they get all the comics plus they get a colouring in book sent out to them in April next year or May, or who knows, definitely March. I'm hoping for March. It all depends on the Chinese New Year, because we print a lot of the books in China, because they obviously do stuff. We do print a lot of comics in Australia as well. But when we go to very high volume runs, we do have to go overseas. Local runs, like small runs, we do comic, we reprint the comics here in Australia often.
Yep.
But yeah, so, and I still print a lot of my prints, the little A4 prints we do, and all the other things like the collector cards we do here in Australia as well. So yeah, it's exciting. Check it out, see what you think. It's on Kickstarter right now. I don't know. What do you think?
I think so. We'll put all the links and everything in the podcast page, so everyone can go check it out, and plus all your work as well.
Yeah.
But before we sort of wrap up the episode, I have two questions.
Oh no.
These are two random questions.
Okay.
One's a very important one, and one's sort of something a little fun.
Yep. Cool.
Number one, as an artist yourself, and for our listeners out there who are probably wanting to get into being an artist themselves, or maybe write or draw comic books, or even get into concept art like you did, what advice would you give them and what to do?
Ooh, I'd say, yeah, I don't know. See, I'd say start young as possible, and study hard. And like, I got into the industry at 28, or I started studying at 28. I did graphic design beforehand, but at the same time, having studied graphic design and being a salesman has helped me now, because I know now how to use graphic design on my comic books, how to design the lettering on the page. I know how to design, you know, collector cards, or design all the little things, and brand my comic so that it looks attractive and interesting for people and makes it more exciting. So my advice to people is to kind of, you know, get into it as soon as you can. I know it's hard to decide what you want to do in life, but just follow your heart, follow your passion, and just start at it. If you want to start writing comics, just do it. Like, just start writing a script. And if you do get into it, don't ask artists to do shit for free, because they won't most of the time.
Damn, there goes my plan.
There goes your plan, man. But, you know, maybe talk to them about collaborating in some way, paying them and collaborating, or a 50-50 share on it if you pay them as well. Look into, you know, do it, starting small. You know, start, if you want to be a writer, my advice is write short stories. Start with writing short stories. I would have started that way, but I really, like I said, being a lot older, I'm like, well, I'm only going to live once. I better focus on writing something that I really, really want to write.
Yep.
And Luminous Ages is the story that I really, really want to make, about the Dream Ages, and the powers are just insane. So I'm just excited to finally, that'll come out, the graphic novel will be out next year, later next year, and that'll have all the powers finally revealed. But issue 1 to 4 shows the journey and all the adventure beforehand, and all the cool characters, and it's got a lot of cool story in it. But I suppose for me, like, to help other people is just, like, you know, stop talking about myself, Anthony, God. I don't know, like, it's no direct way to get into the industry. It's the thing is, you've got to be patient with it. Like, I didn't get in straight away. It wasn't, like I said, I applied to Liquid, and 2 years later they contacted me. thing is, do everything. Everything you can to work, like, find out what you want to do. If you want to be an artist, focus on that. If you want to be a comic book artist, focus on that. But it's nothing wrong with having a few tricks in your bag. I am a concept artist, and I'm a comic book artist and writer, but I also am a game designer. I design games, and I'm also a graphic designer. I know how to sell. I'm a salesman, you know. I've worked in different fields. I'm a teacher as well. So it's good to have a few skills or tricks up your sleeve. And I'm not saying go and do it, like, spread yourself too thin. But I'm saying, like, have your focus. Like, if you want to be a writer, but find out what is something else creative that's related to writing. Could I become a storyboard artist? You know, storyboards aren't as detailed as normal artworks. Or could I be a 3D modeler? You know, or could I be a get a job in doing visual effects? Or could I get a job in the media? Or whatever it is. Can you find something else creative that's related to your field that's going to help you? And for me, it's weird because it's what happened with me. Like I said, I didn't get into doing this straight away. But I kind of instinctively picked the things that have helped me. You know, I've picked graphic design. I've picked sales. I worked in sales. I picked teaching. And all those things have helped me now. Like, I have people at cons asking me, how do you do it? You know, they want to know. And that's why I got a Patreon up. And I think I'm the only Aussie on Patreon that actually has 3 lessons a month on my videos.
Okay.
So if you download my videos on Patreon, I've got one. Usually every second month I talk on them.
Mm-hmm.
Every second month. I've been trying to do it every month, but with cons I can't sometimes record my voice on the video. But every second month, or during when it's not con season, every month I have me talking about how to do concept art, how to do comics, how to do illustration for book covers, and doing demos of how to do it like a class. So that's helped me, because if I didn't have the skill in teaching and that master's, I wouldn't be able to do a Patreon. The Patreon's succeeding. You know, we're getting about, you know, $500 US a month. And that's not an amazing income, but it just helps pay the comic. It helps me pay my time to do Patreon, and helps me to pay for a page and pay to get Rob to help me on the comic.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's my advice, is start somewhere, start small. You know, I started small, I just started doing game graphics, you know, for Tapjoy, and I started doing illustration. I started doing advertising illustration, that's how I started, and in the industry. But prior to that, I was doing graphic design, which is kind of an entry-level field. I mean, you look at all the video games out there now, they've got a user interface design. That's graphic design. That's creative still. I never got those sort of cool jobs when I was a graphic designer. I wish I did. But you never know. Like now, like, I don't know where my future is. Like, I mean, I know where it is. I'm going to keep on creating Luminous Ages. But let's say all the comic conventions collapse. Knock on wood, they don't in Australia. But let's say all the comic conventions in Australia and New Zealand go to the gurgler. And I can't sell anything. I can't even sell one comic at a show. No one wants, you know. I know that if I had to, I could maybe go to a games company and say, hey, I can do your interface design plus do your illustrations.
Yep.
So, like, a lot of people that I know in the industry, like, I've been to talks where Rising Sun Pictures, who do all the visual effects in Adelaide, where I'm from, one of the things, like, Nick Peel has said, who is the art director, he says, we hire people that have got a mixed bag of skills, because if he's doing one thing, what happens if that job comes out under your feet? What if you're a great 3D animator in Maya, but no one uses Maya anymore? So everyone starts using 3DS Max for some reason.
Yep.
That's not going to happen. But, or what if, like, you're a great concept artist, but like me, but that's all you do. But then, like, when they're making a film, say it takes 9 months to do the visual effects and do the film, then the first 2 months might only be concept art. And the rest of the time that you're on that movie, say Pirates of the Caribbean or whatever, or if it's Game of Thrones, the other 6 months is visual effects. So double up your skills. Don't just study one thing. Don't go and do a Bachelor of Visual Arts like me, like an idiot I was, and thinking that's your only education. Do a Bachelor of Visual Arts and then go study online, which is what I did later, that I realized I needed to study concept art online.
Yep.
And then I studied 2D animation, and then I had graphic design behind me. So the more skills you have, the better. You know, if you want to be a concept artist, maybe study 3D modeling. I want to touch on more 3D modeling. When I get time, I'm going to invest time into ZBrush and Poser and all those sort of programs, just to have that skill set, because that helps with comics. I can model all my pages, the layout, and then paint on top of them.
Yep.
I'm still creating my comics. It's digital, but at least my comic's getting, you know, created faster. So it doesn't hurt having a few skills under your belt, you know. I mean, if you want to be a writer, like I said, maybe look into doing editing for people, you know. Maybe looking into, this is what I would say to writers, is editing, writing small journal articles for, you know, magazines like National Geographic. I mean, that'd probably be hard to get into, but, you know, like, just find places where you could get a gig writing for someone for, say, $100, you know, to write or do editing or whatever it is, and build that up slowly. And then, you know, once you got, you need to do the crappy jobs. You need to paint the dung, you know. You need to create the dung, the shit, before you can create the gold. And that's exactly what someone at DreamWorks said to me. I think it was James Klein. He does concept art. He did the concept art. I think I got the name wrong there, but there's a guy called James, and he worked on the DreamWorks movies. He basically, for 3 months when he was at DreamWorks, and he's on A Bug's Life, he was painting poo. The dung beetle's poo for 3 months. So it's not all glamorous as well, doing this. It is great. It's a great field. There's a lot of exciting things that you can work on. But you got to also, you know, can you do the grunt work behind everything else? You know, like, I made a game. It was great. I made a card game, but I had to spend a year beta testing it to get it right. You know, that's grunt work. No one wants to do that. And I found beta testers. We've got a community of people playing our card game across Australia. But, you know, that those people that are doing that, they're learning about the game industry. They do by beta testing. Now we've got one beta tester. He's like, he wants to do a course in game design. I think it's Tristan. He's like, I want to do game design and learn that. And you know, when, and now that he's done, I suppose, the hard yards with me, you know, he now can apply that to what he wants to do. And then if he needs an opportunity, then, you know, he might get an opportunity with our studio. Or, you know, so it's like, don't be scared to, I'm not saying do work for free, but I'm saying don't be scared to get your hands dirty and try something that you, that is a, that pays, that's a paid job, but it's not as exciting, but it's related to your field.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the best advice I can give anyone. If you're amazing and, you know, you get an amazing portfolio together, put it out there, send it out to people. If you think you're amazing, you don't need to do that crappy work on the side to build it up, and that's fine. You know, like, who am I to say how good you are? But if you're amazing already, you've got an amazing folio, then have an amazing web presence. You got to know about marketing. Have a brilliant website. Be on ArtStation. Be on the best concept art communities around the world.
Yep.
You know, and put, and if you believe in yourself that much and you are amazing, like, who am I to judge? Like I said, send it out to all those studios. You know, go network at conferences, at conventions about art, about concept art. There's heaps of them around the world. There's, you know, go to Concept Design Workshop in Australia. Do a course with Simon. And if you're brilliant, he'll give you a job probably.
Yeah.
Go to IFCC. There's a thing in, I think, in Eastern Europe. They have a big thing in Croatia there on concept art. Go and show off your work there. You never know. You might meet someone that gives you a job.
Yep.
There's Trojan Horse Was a Unicorn in Portugal. That's actually, my staff member, Christy, went there this year. And she took a month off from the studio and she went there. And I allowed her to because I believe it's good for her professional development. So she went there. And she studied, she went and networked with people in the industry, and they gave her a critique and they told her what she was doing wrong or right for what she wants. She wants to be a children's book illustrator. And so that was great for her. So do all that stuff. You know, if you already think you're good enough and you don't want to do those little crappy jobs, you know, or the, I want to say they're crappy, but the jobs that are related to your field, then put yourself out there where you think you can get a job. So so what was the second question?
Well, I'll do a very quick one.
I just wanted to help people. Oh, yeah. Because totally, I'm genuine about helping people. Being an old, or not old, being a,
you are old.
I am old. Oh, no. No, we went there. Now, being a lecturer and being like a university or academic, what I do still foster is helping people, and I still believe in helping, trying to help people get into the industry, people that want to work. I'm all about education, and I'm still learning myself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I've achieved things that I'm proud of. I don't think I'm the best in the world, I'm being honest, but I still educate myself every day. I try and read books. You know, there's books, I've got a library full of books. I still haven't gone through them all. I'm still trying to get books on concept art, read, you know, from some great artists and learn from them. You know, there's so many books that you can read as an artist and a writer that I really recommend. But yeah, I think the point is I want to educate and help people. And that's what, you know, I hope my advice, you know, resonates with you, and I hope it gives you some direction. So yeah, those that are listening, I hope I've helped.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay, our final question.
Yes.
And we'll make this very quickly.
Yes, yes.
Is since this
I can't tell you the color of my underwear.
We don't need to know these things, Andy. Some things need to be at least remain a mystery to our audience. Since it's October, even though this episode will be out around the time that Kickstarter is in November, it is October. It is Halloween month.
Season, yep.
Yep. What would you say are your favorite horror movies?
Oh, yes. By far, I don't get scared. It's weird because I love horror and I watch heaps of horror movies and I don't get scared easily.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I'm more into paranormal stuff.
Yep.
And, like, I don't get scared by axe murderers and all that. And Freddy Krueger, it doesn't really scare me. But the one movie, there's two. But the first one is the Insidious series.
Oh, yeah.
I think excuse the French, they're fucking creepy. Sometimes you can't go to bed without worrying, you know, that there's going to be a demon hanging off the shelf or hanging off your ceiling or something like that, you know. And next series I like for their creativity. I don't think actually, the first one was scary. The others weren't scary. But VHS... VHS 1 I thought was creepy. I really liked one of the parts. There's like, they're all short stories in one movie.
Yeah, anthology horror films.
And the whole idea is that these VHS tapes left behind of all these supernatural occurrences.
Yep.
But I really got freaked out by the vampire chick and that she's like going out with these guys pick up this girl thinking that, you know, they're gonna do something horrible to her or rape her or whatever, and like she's sitting there talking to one guy, she's mesmerizing one guy, telling him she loves him already, she's in love with him, and they go back to the room and then she ends up pretty much eating them, their brains out, and then just and she's still in love with one of them and he's freaked out by her and she can't deal with the fact that he doesn't love her because she's a vampire.
Yep.
And she picks him up and dumps his brains in the, I don't know, somewhere. I don't know, who knows. But yeah, that sort of stuff is pretty cool. But Insidious, that's about it. I love H.P. Lovecraft. I love all of his stories, but that hasn't really been made into really good feature films yet, any of the Lovecraft stuff.
I think Reanimator is probably the best one.
Like, yeah, I haven't seen that yet.
You haven't seen Reanimator?
No,
Reanimator. That's actually Marcy's favorite horror movie.
Now Marcy's gonna kill me.
Yeah, Marcy's gonna kill you now for not having seen Reanimator.
See, everything happens for a reason. Maybe she wasn't meant to be on the podcast.
If she was here right now, she would be yelling at you right about now.
Back of my head.
Exactly. Well, I guess that'll wrap up this special In Conversation episode of the Super Podcast. Thank you very much, Anthony, for jumping on the episode to talk about your work as an artist and as a comic book writer.
Yeah.
And if people want to get in contact you, where can they find you out there on the internet?
Okay, so I do have a Patreon. So mm-hmm. patreon.com/AnthonyChristou.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually, if you want to learn about how to do this art, I have videos every month. I have the comic that goes on there. Then there's also my company website where Disney found me and I did all those jobs for him. So it's achristouillustration.com. So that's achristouillustration.com.
Yep.
You'll put the link in there, I suppose.
I'll put as many links as I possibly can.
You'll link it all up.
I'll link everything. So
yeah. So usually my company website is the best. We have a little link to my Patreon from there, or to the Luminous Ages comic from there. So achristouillustration is probably your best bet. achristouillustration.com. And yeah, that's about it. But thank you very much for having me on the show. It's been a while that we've been waiting for this, you know. You've been busy, I've been busy, but you know,
you'll never want to be on the show.
My career will turn to crap. is that right? I don't know.
Well, hopefully not. Hopefully this will buck the trend.
That's it.
You can, for us here at Super Podcast, you can find me, Benjamine, at my Twitter page at twitter.com/Benjamine. On my Facebook page at facebook.com/BeJamine, or my fan page at facebook.com/TerribleAussie, and of course you can find my weekly writings over at supermasty.com. I've been taking somewhat of a little break over there at the moment, but I'm going to be having some new reviews and and articles up on the site very soon, so keep a lookout for those. And also keep a lookout for my Horror Down Under column over at thescreamcast.com. My most recent one was on the supernatural mockumentary Lake Munger, so keep a lookout for that one. And of course, for Marcy herself, you can find Marcy at her Twitter page at twitter.com/supermarcy. And of course, you can find the Super Network, supermarcy.com Twitter page at SM_
just put it in the link.
Super Network out on Twitter, and of course our Facebook page at Super Network at Facebook. So I'll probably mix up that last one, so forgive me. Marcy will just yell at me later. So I hope all of our listeners enjoyed this episode. It has been a while since we have done some podcasts, but we're going to be doing some more very soon, so keep a lookout for those. And we'll see you all later. See you, everyone. Bye.
Bye.